They try to get us back on point. If you can recall, the purpose of this evening is for us to put forth an affirmative and to use the response for those things, but I find that several new arguments have been advanced in the response, some of which we've already heard since last evening. But very quickly, I want to say a couple of things in response to some of the things you've raised. First of all, Matthew 5, verse 17 and 18, if you don't mind if I could share your slide on that one. Matthew 5, 17 and 18, we've got a little technical difficulty with our visual over here. But Matthew chapter 5, verses 17 and 18, as you write it says, so think not that I've come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have not come to abolish, work at the loose, but to fulfill. So Jesus says unequivocally here that his purpose for coming, Brother Donahue, was not to abolish. Now you claim that in the very next verse, Jesus says that he does indeed abolish. Last night, I told you to look at the Greek and you just thanked me for making you aware that the word used in verse 17 for fulfill is not the same as the word used in verse 18. You thanked me, but yet you did not consider that in your response. In verse 18, truly I say to you, so heaven and earth shall pass away, not one iota or one tittle will pass from the law until all is accomplished. Not the word plerote that we find in verse 17, but the word genetai, a completely different word, does not mean the same thing. In fact, if you want to know what it means to fulfill the law, I'm sure there may be some students in here that know what it means to fulfill the requirements for graduation. When you fulfill something, you do the requirements. And so if you turn to Romans chapter 13, verses 8 through 10, and I'm going to try as best as possible to say in the New Testament, Romans chapter 13, verses 8 through 10, we see Paul uses the very same word that Jesus uses, plerao. He says, owe no one anything except to love one another, for he who loves his neighbor has fulfilled. And if you take a look at your Greek right there, you'll see the word there, plerao, the perfect tense, that they wrote, and has fulfilled the law. Look at verse 9. The commandments, you shall not commit adultery, shall not kill, shall not steal, shall not forbid, and any other commandments are summed up in this sentence, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Love does no wrong to a neighbor, therefore love is the fulfilling of the law. So yes, Jesus did fulfill the law, as we are required to fulfill the law by demonstrating our love to God and our love to our fellow human beings. Now, of course, you also used the same example that you used last night, having to do with the liberation of America from British oppression. Now, of course, even though I myself am British, I take no offense to the analogy that you make, but let's understand here. When Britain made America win the war, we find that there was a change in government. Are you suggesting that God is no longer the king of this world? Are you suggesting that Christ is against God? Are you suggesting that Christ undid that which his Father did, even though he let us know clearly in his word that he came to fulfill and to do the will of his Father? Another question I do have to do with your continued references to the New Testament law. If you can tell me, please, where in the New Testament can we find a description, a concise description of this New Testament law to which you keep referring. Another question, too, I'm sorry I got to waylay a little bit from what we had planned to put forth here, but you mentioned as you were looking at the Ten Commandments, that the Ten Commandments was not a perfect law, and you said, for instance, where in the Ten Commandments that anything is there about homosexual heresy. Well, of course, as you know and I know, that before the New Testament came, it was not okay for people to behave in immoral ways. And if you could turn very quickly to Deuteronomy chapter 22, verse 22, Deuteronomy 22, verse 22, you will read something that lets you know that certain behaviors being sent was not something that was at all novel to the New Testament. Deuteronomy 22, verse 22, it says, if a man be found lying with a woman, marriage and husband, then they shall both of them die, both the man, the late woman, and the woman, so shall they both be put away from Israel. It goes on, that's the wrong text I got there. That's the wrong text. Somebody help me here, please.
What are you looking for?
Don't like jumping on the wrong text over here. But anyway, the text I'm looking for, there are a number of them here in the Old Testament which speak about the wrongfulness of same-sex relationships. The wrongfulness of same-sex relationships. Leviticus 16 is one, and there are others. All right? But anyway, the point that we're making here is that homosexuality did not just become a sin with the coming of Jesus Christ. It was a sin from the Old Testament. Then you also make the statement that the Sabbath is something that was given only to the Jews. Something that was given only to the Jews. Turn to please to Mark chapter 2, verse 28. Mark chapter 2, verse 28. And we see here Jesus himself speaking makes a very profound declaration, 27 and 28. He said unto them in verse 27, the Sabbath was made for who? Was made for man, and not man for the Sabbath. It does not say here that the Sabbath was made for the Jews. Now, of course, you mentioned that when we look at the various texts in the Old Testament, it speaks about the Sabbath being a perpetual sign to the Israelites, etc., etc., etc. Now, of course, the question one has to ask is, to whom was God talking? To whom did God covenant with? Well, as we look at the Old Testament time, then he did make a covenant with Israel. So it is true. It is very true. When he covenanted with Israel, he is speaking to Israel and no other people. And you rightly said that when a Gentile becomes a part of Israel, then the Gentile then has to keep the laws that pertain to Israel because they are now a part of Israel. But of course, if you return to the book of Galatians and the fourth chapter, Galatians and the fourth chapter, you'll see that the people of God are described in a magnificently new way. Galatians chapter 4, but my text is mixed up today for some reason. Galatians chapter 6, verses 16 through 18. Well, Paul makes the statement, peace and mercy be upon all who walk upon this rule, the rules that he puts down before, especially upon the Israel of God. Henceforth, he says, let no man trouble me, for I bear in my body the mark of Jesus Christ. Galatians chapter 4, verses 16 through 18, let us know that as Christians, our identity is tied into the identity of Israel. We are now referred to as the Israel of God. And as we look at this whole concept of being the Israel of God, we see that as the Israel of God, we have indeed entered into a new covenant with him. The covenant described in Jeremiah chapter 31, verses 31 through 33, when God says the new covenant is not a covenant of stone, but a covenant that indeed has been written on our hearts. Now, as we move on here, we also see that he made another statement referring to Hebrews chapter 9, verses 15 through 17. And if you raise the question about the whole concept of covenant, or testament as you say, of course you know covenant and testament, the two are indeed the same word in the Greek, diatheke. Now, you raise this whole issue to say that we indeed are the inheritors of a new will. And you also look at that verse over there, Hebrews 9, 15 through 17, and you show that Jesus is indeed the mediator of a new covenant. And I do indeed grant assent to that. So, he is the leader of the new covenant so that those who are called may receive the promise of eternal inheritance, since a death has occurred which redeems them from the transgressions under the first covenant. For where a covenant is involved, the death of the one who made it must be established. For a covenant takes effect only at death, since it is not enforced as long as the one who made it is alive. Now you say this because you want to say that even as Jesus is the mediator of the new covenant, that the old law has passed away. And again, I raise the question as I raised last night, what is a covenant? Is a covenant a thing, or is a covenant a thing, or an agreement that is made between two people? And I didn't mean to spend all my time on that, but very quickly, let's talk a little bit about the Sabbath timeline that we were establishing, and I hope that you will respond to the issues that we raised concerning this Sabbath timeline. Now, as you look at the Sabbath timeline, Dr. Doggett took you to Isaiah chapter 66, and of course, he also took you to the first century. Now, the issue that is raised here, even as you mentioned that the New Testament Christians worship on the first day of the week, the issue that is raised here, again, and that you haven't shown us, where is the commandment? Where is the commandment? You asked me last night, you didn't show us, you still have not shown us. Now, why does this become important? Well, I'm sure you would agree, Brother Donahue, that as we look at Scripture, we know that God's people, up until the time of Jesus Christ, worshiped on the seventh day of the week. Now, the earliest Christians, as we look at the New Testament, Acts chapter 2, and throughout the book of Acts, were all Jews. Now, are you trying to tell us that these Jews who embraced Jesus Christ as the Messiah, all of a sudden said that the Ten Commandments is no longer valid for us, and we will stop worshiping on Sabbath? Surely something that was such a significant symbol to the Jewish people would have been recorded in Scripture had God intended for his people to stop worshiping on the seventh day of the week. In fact, if we can jump out of the Bible for a second and take a look at history. I mentioned to you, and I'm sure you've done your research and you know this, that in the first century, we have Jews and all Christians worshiping on the seventh day of the week, the seventh day Sabbath. You have yet to show us a text that proves otherwise. And then, of course, as we look through the annals of history, we find that it is not until the year 150, that Justin Martyr, a Christian apologist, mentioned that Christians should worship on the Sunday. 50 years after the last book of the Bible is written, the book of Revelation, a pagan who came into the Christian church said that Christians ought to start worshiping on the first day of the week. But the majority still worship on the time later. Okay, but the majority still worship on the seventh day of the week. In fact, as we're going to show later, it's not until the Roman Emperor Constantine embraced Christianity, or at least feigned the embrace of Christianity, that we actually see that Christians began to embrace Sunday in any wholesale way. Then, of course, as we look throughout history, we find that when you come down to the 5th century, the 10th century, the majority of Christians were keeping the Sabbath. In fact, you come down as far as the 15th century, and there are many books which I'm sure you're aware of. You can look at these books, and you'll see that the Celtic churches in Wales and in Scotland and Ireland were all keeping the Sabbath. The Waldenses were keeping the Sabbath. But I think what is very, very important as we look at this, even as we look at Sabbath as an expression of God's liberation, what's really, really important is that as we look at the 15th century, the strongest bastions of Sabbath keeping were actually on the continent of Africa. The Ethiopian Orthodox Church, and I'm not sure if you know much about the Ethiopian Orthodox Church or even Orthodox Church, that's the oldest Christian church, the oldest Christian state church in the world. The Ethiopian Orthodox Church. 4th century, King Ezana transferred his kingdom to Christianity. Now, it's in the 4th century, 400 years after Christ, a case would transfer its whole kingdom to Christianity, then why in the world would we not have its churches worshiping on the first day of the week? In fact, if you go to Ethiopia today, you will find that still entrenched in their constitution, and the majority of people who call themselves Ethiopian Orthodox still worship the Lord on the seventh day of the week. The same is true for the Egyptian Coptic Church, the same is true for the Armenian Orthodox Church. And so the issue is, if you have many Christians still holding on to the seventh day of the week as Sabbath, then how in the world could we in the West have any sort of imperialist guile to say that simply because it's being done in Europe, that it's been ordained by God? And so we see then, as we look through history, there have always been people who have kept the Sabbath. And of course, in your discussion, and you mentioned those who keep Sabbath today, you keep referring to Adventists. Well, there are over 400 denominations worldwide of Christian people who profess faith in Jesus Christ, who keep the Sabbath. What's very, very important, is that even as we look at Scripture, as Pastor Douglas pointed out in the last segment, the Word lets us know that as we go from here to eternity, Isaiah 66, verse 23, it shall come to pass that from one new moon to another, and from one Sabbath to another, all flesh shall come to worship God. Now I know you're probably going to raise the issue about the new moon and say, well, does that mean that we have to keep the new moon? Well, if you take a look at your calendar, you will find that your calendar has 12 months. 12 months. The word month is derived from the word moon. So we talk about one new moon to another, month to month, Sabbath to Sabbath, all flesh shall worship before God. So, brothers out of you, as we mentioned, the onus is still on you to basically prove to us that there is a text in the Bible that explicitly states, thou shalt worship on Sunday. That explicitly states, remember the first day to keep it holy. Which explicitly states, I have sanctified the first day of the week. Also, we're still looking for a text, an explicit text. Not a text that says that the first covenant has been done away with. We know that. Not a text that says we are not saved by the law. We know that. But a text that says the Sabbath, S-A-B-B-A-T-H, the Sabbath has been done away with. A text that says that we no longer have to observe the law of God. A text that states that God has changed his mind and no longer sanctifies the day that he made hallowed and set apart for a holy use on the week of creation. Brother Donahue, I honestly believe that you are a searcher for biblical truth. But I adjure you today, that even as you look at text after text after text, that you look at these texts in their context, because if you have a text that is not in its context,